If you wanted to adopt a healthy lifestyle, who would you turn to? Maybe fitness guru Michelle Bridges or the CSIRO diet books, perhaps? Well, if you're writer Brian Kozlowski, you look at your own bookshelves and take down a copy of Pride and Prejudice? For 2 years, Brian lived the life of a Jane Austen character with the express purpose of getting healthy and fit. I can't wait to hear how gruel and scones helped him shape up. Have you ever taken life advice from a fictional character? Let us know how that worked out for you. David Copperfield's career tips? Mary Poppins' financial planning ideas? Let us know on our Facebook page. Brian Kozlowski is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America, and his new book is called The Jane Austen Diet, Austen's Secrets to Food, Health and Incandescent Happiness. Brian, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you so much for having me.
Incandescent happiness. I can't wait to hear how that works. But Jane Austen is not front of mind for most people when they think of health. Her characters are always eating tea and crumpets rather than, you know, olive oil and lean proteins. Why did she become your health guru?
Yeah, so before beginning this project, I, like most everyone else, never realized how interested Jane actually was in health. I never noticed that the word health pops up more than 100 times in her novels, or that, you know, Austen had been doling out wellness advice from her earliest stories onto the last thing she ever wrote, which was a novel called Sanditon. It was a complete shock for me. And it happened about 2 years ago, around the time I was turning 30, when I found myself in, I guess you could call somewhat of a health wobble, just typical third life crisis stuff. My weight was starting to, you know, gain, and I had slumps in energy. So basically, I was losing the bloom of youth, as Austen would say. So I started, I didn't turn to Austen, of course, you know, not away, but I started with the latest health and wellness research that I could find. But curiously enough, I was reading Jane Austen, or rereading her, again at that same time. And that's really when the revelation happened. I kept noticing that there was really remarkable similarities between the latest discoveries from modern health research and what Austen promoted in her novels over 200 years ago, whether that was through eating or exercising or her insights of just taking care of your mind. Austen was consistently on point with that research, and purposefully so. You know, these health tips aren't just dropped into her novels by accident. They really do nothing to move the romance along, but Austen obviously wanted them in, and why she included them is another fascinating topic, which we can discuss or leave it there. But
I want to have lots of time to talk about both the exercise aspects, but particularly the food aspects. But, you know, I mean, I guess they drive the romance along because there was so much healthful walking, which you might encounter your beloved on a muddy path in. How important was physical exercise?
Gosh, as I come to find out, if everyone knew Austen's smarter approach to exercise, the world would be a much more joyful place and with far less exercise injuries. Though understanding Austen's philosophy towards exercise really requires doing a complete paradigm shift, really, from how we view exercise today. You know, that sweaty, painful thing you do at the gym at a certain hour. Austen really pushes back on this, probably because during that era, she saw a real shift between how people were used to incorporate exercise, you know, effortlessly into their lifestyle, to one where they were starting to fit it in, you know, between their more sedentary lifestyle habits. And that's something that concerned her. At the time, there was this exercise gadget called the chamber horse, which jiggled you about, you know, rather humorously. And it's just moving exercise away, you know, towards something that was almost machine-like too. And so she wanted to remind readers how effortless and organic it really should be, and how enjoyable it should be. That's why she's so careful to pepper her novels with only pleasurable words when she describes exercise. Words like delightful and comfortable and even snug, you know, they seem really out of place in our exercise jargon today, but they're there. And because they're there, because exercise is kept so pleasurable, Austen's healthiest heroines, they really rack up some astonishingly high pedometer ratings because of this. Lizzie in Pride and Prejudice sees nothing really strenuous in going for a 3 mile walk to Netherfield, you know, to visit her sister, because she is so physically fit. And it's interesting how research has has discovered that link between enjoyment and sustainable fitness strategies.
Wonder sometimes, yeah. I mean, we don't see them doing interval training or anything particularly aerobic. I'm not sure if, right. you know, creeping through the bushes after grouse really counts. Is that in line with modern teachings about the kind of intensity of exercise we need?
It is. Like I said, like we, for, you know, about two decades now, we've been conditioned to view exercise as something that only takes place in a certain hour and at intense intervals, like you said. But recent studies, especially by the American Heart Association a few years back, have really seen that walking, just as something that Austin advises all the time throughout our novels, walking is just as body beneficial as running is. It just takes a little bit more time and is obviously softer on your joints. But it's all about pleasure for Austin. It's all about enjoyment. It's really more about getting your mindset right. And you know, for all of us who have failed to complete a New Year's resolution to exercise more, we can really see the brilliance behind that. If we don't enjoy something, we're not going to stick with it.
And Brian, you took up her idea of a healthy, brisk morning walk. How did you start feeling when you started adopting some of these lifestyle changes?
Yeah, so that was the first thing that I actually noticed a certain pattern in Austin's novels, which she was recommending her healthiest heroines to do, and something that I thought, it pops up so frequently, you know, this actually might help me, because I'd always been a borderline insomniac, and it just seemed like Austin's characters, her healthiest characters, are just crazy morning people. I mean, they get so much accomplished in the morning. It's astonishing. They have about a two-hour break between they wake up and they eat breakfast. So there's a lot done. And one of the things they always do is ramble outside. It's really not about exercise. It's just a leisurely stroll. So I started doing that. And, of course, that totally links up and is supported by modern research of how desperately our bodies depend on exposure to natural light, which is so much time brighter than what we can get inside. And it worked almost instantaneously. It took a couple of days for my, you know, circadian rhythm to be rebooted. But I think it's lovely how, you know, Austin kind of beat the medical research so far ahead of her time there.
It's interesting, though, I guess she was writing about the comfortably well-off characters, because they were, you know, it was interesting to get that insight into their lives. But we don't live like that anymore, and a lot of the Regency-era population didn't live like that. They didn't have servants to do things for them, and they didn't sit around doing needlework punctuated by brisk walks. How many similarities were there between what Jane was able to do in terms of health in her life and what we're able to adopt?
Gosh, well, you know, obviously, for you know, snobby reasons, Jane really wasn't that interested in the lower classes. But for health reasons, it's interesting to note that the lower classes, with their very, you know, physically demanding jobs and their movement and their not because they couldn't, they're not overeating. Jane didn't see the need to really preach to them like she saw the need to preach to her own class, and you know, that gentry class, the rich and those who aspired to be so, because they were really the ones that were facing some of the same health challenges we face today. You know, there was a mini obesity epidemic in the late Georgian era caused by, you know, a surplus of food and sedentary lifestyle that the leisure class was becoming to embrace, and this concerned Jane, and she you know, reading her novels, her books, from a historical point, her books are so counterculture, and they pick apart what was fashionable at the time, and she delivers such refreshing alternatives that it's hard to say that she wasn't that her mission wasn't actually to indoctrinate and to preach a better alternative, a better lifestyle than what many of her class were beginning to embrace to their health detriment.
We're chatting with Brian Kozlowski. He's a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the author of The Jane Austen Diet, which he adopted himself for a couple of years. And perhaps you've taken life advice from a fictional character, the Sam Slade approach to interpersonal relationships, the Becky Sharp guide to morality. I'd love to hear how that worked out. Let us know on our Facebook page. Brian, let's talk about food. What did you learn about the Austen character's relationship to food?
Well, the relationship with food is so enviable and so balanced. It's almost nirvanic, really. They really glide from one meal to the next, enjoying food, but never really allowing it to control them. One of the iconic things about being an Austin heroine is your mental detachment for food. Towards food, you don't talk about it much. You don't think about it a lot. But posed right next to that is their just honest enjoyment of food. It's something that's always present, but again, it doesn't control them. So this balance was really just Austin's unique philosophy about how to keep one's relationship with food in its proper place. And of course, the detachment is incredibly brilliant. Science is really only starting to learn how our thoughts and our stomachs are so intimately connected. And simple things like trying to battle a certain food temptation is going to be that much harder if you're trained to think about food and to think about it often. So that one hand, is so brilliant in terms of how she recommends emotional detachment, and nobody gets too touchy-feely with food. Only her comical characters do that.
And there's a lovely bit where you talk about how they approach bread in very tiny amounts.
It was, yeah, bread. I mean, I love the fact that Jane gave me the liberty of putting a defense of bread in this book and in a diet book, too. So, but yes, it was how they ate bread. It was incredibly tiny amounts. It was all about refined starch consumption at that time, because carbs and anything starchy, of course, were associated with the lower classes again. Mm. So, you didn't want to do anything to become, as Emma would say, a vulgar farmer, or be mistaken for a vulgar farmer. So bread was sliced incredibly thinly. So all the bread that you find, her characters eating in their delicate breakfast rooms at the time were considered paper thin. Actually, some commentators at the time noticed how they called it poppy thin slices of toast. So we're talking crackers almost. But there's other ways to enjoy food, bread properly at that time. But yeah, that's more in the book.
And we would assume, I guess when we look back in time, we just assume that the meat was a big staple of Jane's world. But what does she say about meat?
Oh gosh, she devotes more space to meat than really any other food, as nothing really signaled your social status like meat. It was center stage on rich tables. It just meant you had money to buy it or enough land to hunt it. If you remember the 1995 version of Sense and Sensibility, for all of her undignified slumps into poverty, Mrs. Dashwood refuses to even to give up her family's supply of beef. The underlying premise, of course, behind that is that I'm sorry, vegetarians here, but meat has always been historically considered and is, and to this day is the most nutritionally complete food we have. It delivers all the amino acids, minerals, and vitamins our body needs. The only vitamin that is lacking in cooked meat, of course, is vitamin C. So it's something that has always been historically the most desirable, and it was in the Regency era, of course. But of course, when you watch a period movie or something about Jane Austen's on Jane Austen's novels, you get kind of a false idea that there was a huge and almost gross amounts of food on the table. But again, social commentators at the time describe Regency tables with all of that meat as more a variety-rich buffet. So nobody was really pigging out too much on food. And for the reason that meat, as Austen understood, and that she makes references in her novels, it has a satiety valve. So you really can't eat much of it at one sitting. Whereas, a bowl of carb-rich pasta or something, you can eat tons of it, at one sitting. It's interesting that, and of course, meat allows our body to produce more glucagon, which allows us not to store as much fat. So really, Jane was by no means on a high protein diet. I mean, she personally could not afford that, but she definitely prioritized meat when it came, and that's, I think, a better word and a more sane approach to protein. It's that prioritizing protein in her life. So if you have a steak and a potato, Jane would not nix the potato. She would just eat more of the steak.
Well, and it was very heartening too to see in your book, The Jane Austen Diet, that vegetables and salad featured a lot, even though I had completely missed the mentions of them in the novels on my annual rereadings. Brian Kozlowski, I'm saddened that Jane was not a fan of coffee before breakfast. Obviously, the double shot latte on the way to work was not going to work for her, but it's been a fascinating read. Thank you so much for chatting with us on Life Matters today about it.
Oh, thank you.
Brian Kozlowski trained at the Culinary Institute of America. He's a writer. His work has appeared in many publications, and his new book is called The Jane Austen Diet. And of course, we don't recommend that you should change your diet or exercise regime hugely without checking with your doctor before you make any big, big changes.